This is Jim Mansky.
And Jory Mansky.
And we're glad to have you here on the Heart of Conflict on NVC Academy. It's great to be here.
And it is the first class of the Heart of Conflict 1.
We've got a really full class planned. Some of the things that we have planned today are a self-connection exercise that we find useful to both review the process of nonviolent communication and also to help get ready for a mediation. So that's one thing that we'll be doing.
And then we'll also be overviewing the mediation process and then doing a conflict observation exercise. And we'll have an opportunity for questions and answers and do a demo. And we'll do a feedback round and complete. So that's the general overview. One piece also before we do that is we will be sharing a story about mediation. So, any clarifying questions, anything anyone wants to ask or comment on before we begin that agenda?
I'm as much interested in this in terms of personal as much as professional. I want to be able to use this in conflict with my supervisor, you know, if she and I come head to head, which is it happens.
I'm glad to hear that, actually. I think that the skills that you'll be learning here will be effective in our own personal lives to be able to deal with conflict with other people. They're also skills we can use with ourselves, and they're skills that we can use to step into as a third presence. I'd like to give you some information about Jim and I. We came to NVC through mediation. We were mediators for about 10 years before we met Marshall. He was brought in as an international mediator to what was a free training. Those two things were a big draw for us, international and free. What we learned was very transformative. Although we had already been mediating, there were pieces of this that really made a huge difference and helped to explain to us why some mediations worked better than others. Why, even though sometimes we would come to some decision about what people would do together, those decisions would not hold, and in fact, people would leave not really caring much about whether it worked for the other person. And when we were able to build a quality of relationship where people saw how important it was that whatever was decided worked for all parties in the mediation, then the agreements began to hold and, in fact, could not just hold, but could adapt as more information was had, as they tried to work it out. Sometimes we'd have agreements where people would agree to pay a certain amount of money on a monthly basis, and often the threat of coming back to court was put in there. But when people actually understood each other's circumstances, they could work through the bumps in the agreements. And if someone missed a payment, for example, they would be able to work through that in a way that could keep the resolution and the ease of the resolution intact.
So through listening to Marshall, we began to get this clarity about the difference that made the difference. For me, that was this whole notion of needs, the universality of human needs, that this was a way that we could knit relationships, that we could support the process of people connecting at the level of the heart, to literally get to the heart of the conflict. We left this workshop feeling awesomely excited and transformed, had kind of fallen in love with Marshall and the puppets and this whole way of talking about life through the lens of needs. We got the opportunity a couple of days later after this very first maybe a 4-hour class or a 5-hour class with Marshall. So we had barely scratched the surface of NVC. This is our very first training. Barely scratched the surface when we got a call from our contact down at the Metro Court in Albuquerque who said that they had a juicy case for us. And so we put it on the schedule. We're driving down to Metro Court and Jory says something to me like, "Oh boy, today we get to try this new NVC stuff at the mediation." I say to Jory something like, well, now I don't know. This is supposed to be a tough mediation. I don't know if we should try these new skills. We'll, you know, subject these four people to some brand new skills. You know, I think we should stick with the old stuff that we know how to do.
And for me, it was a volunteer mediation that we were doing down at the court. It seemed like a perfect time to try something. I thought this would be a wonderful idea. And so I said, well, yeah, if you don't want to try something new, that's okay, but I intend to.
I took a deep breath. We walked into the mediation and we started to work. We introduced ourselves, introduced the process of mediation, and we'd like to give people a little overview of what to expect during the mediation process, and we dove in to the mediation. Now, most of these mediations down at Metro Court would last about an hour and a half to 2 hours. But we were still mediating with these folks about 4.5 hours later. We were creating a quality of connection during this mediation where I felt like I'd known these people my whole life. They had really let me into their lives, and it was a tough mediation. I mean, it was brutally tough with lots of accusations flying, and I was so much struggling to find the language to reflect the needs that I was hearing. It would be very clunky. I'd hear one of the parties, you know, complain about something that the other party had done many years ago or whatever. And okay, let me see if I've got this straight here. Let me see here. I think you're feeling, let's see, you're feeling frustrated in your need. You must have a need in there somewhere. And I was just really struggling to find the vocabulary to express needs. So that's probably part of why it was taking so long for us to get through this mediation. So we were doing it pretty damn poorly as from any kind of objective thing, because we really didn't have the skills. We ended up not coming to an agreement. One of the things we learned from Marshall, and we've learned clearly since then, is it's not about the agreement. It's about getting to this quality of connection with people. And so the only agreement that we came to with these folks was that they wanted to mediate some more. And so another week or so later, we got together and did another round of mediation where we spent another 2 or 3 hours with them. And, you know, we didn't walk out of either mediation with a clear set of requests or a written agreement. We did have this quality of connection with these folks and enhanced a greater quality of connection between the two parties than probably had been present in their life for quite a while. This was a couple who had already been divorced, and basically they were in Metro Court fighting about details left over from their previous business life and their personal life, and it boiled down to like who gets the James Taylor tapes, you know.
Those are always the one you want to be cautious about in terms of focusing on what they're speaking about, because it's never about what they're talking about when they're talking about the James Taylor tapes. Yeah, there's so much underneath going on. And certainly there was a lot of vitriol speak to each other, and it was very painful, actually, to hear the amount of anger and blame.
Yeah, so we walked out of that mediation kind of shaking our head, thinking, well, that was interesting. I don't know that we did such a great job, but, you know, I feel pretty good about it. I feel pretty good about how I feel and about this quality of connection that we built.
The thing was that we struggled through that, and we didn't have a sense that we did a very good job. And they asked for a second mediation. I was amazed.
And then time went by, and we had lots of other chances to practice mediation, and we just kind of forgot about that whole mediation. You know, we didn't have any ongoing relationship with these folks, and that was like the first in a series of, I don't know, probably since then we've probably done about 200 or 300 mediations using nonviolent communication as the focus. And then one day, something weird happened. The phone rang at our house. Jory answered the phone.
And someone on the other end said, this Jim and Jory who mediate. And I went, yeah. She said, well, I have something I'd like to send you. Would you give me your address? And I just gave her my address, and I didn't give it another thought. In retrospect, it was just absolutely amazing that I would even do that, because in terms of being a mediator through a court system, one of the things we don't do is give out our home information. But I did, and then a couple days later, the doorbell rang, and a package came, and I went, oh, that's interesting. It opened up the package, and inside was a book.
And the book had a big stop sign on the cover, and the title of the book was, Stop! Don't Marry That Younger Man. Jory said, Jim, come look at this thing.
And it's really funny, because Jim is younger than I am. I thought it was a joke of some sort. And we looked at it, and it was a story about a man and a woman from the woman's point of view, talking about how terrible he was, how terrible his family was, and the drugs from the rest of the family and just all these.
It was I don't know if you're familiar with the phrase a jackal show, but it was just like one long spew of this woman's pain in this relationship, all the things that had happened with this younger man.
And all the judgments of him and his family.
Page after page after page. And then we noticed that there was like a little sticky on one page. We were kind of baffled. Why are we getting this book? Why are we getting this book that's just full of so much hatred and whatnot? And noticed the sticky, and we turned the page, and there it says something like,
there was one bright spot in all of these travails of going through the courts, having gone through many court scenes, was mediators at Metro Court who for just a brief time were able to, and she said something like, get this guy out of the claws of Miss someone, you know, some other woman, long enough to be able to create a connection between us and to have some sense of understanding.
So then the light bulbs went off in our head. We realized that this is actually an expression of gratitude, something that had happened a few years before during our very first NVC mediation.
And she was so impressed, she actually said, I think they should be nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. Amazing, considering how unskilled they were at that point. We had lots of skills in a lot of ways, but in terms of actually trying to build the bridge in the way we were, using nonviolent communication, stuttering along, it may have been one of the least skilled mediations we'd ever done. I point this out because it's so important to realize, as many have said, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. And although you may not be particularly skilled as you start out, because we never are when we start out in anything, you will probably be the most skilled in the room. When you're involved with people who are in conflict, you will have the most resource to skills. And so we'll invite you right from the beginning to try and stick your neck out and to use whatever you learn. And what my experience was, the more I used it, even when I was unskilled, the more effective I began to be. And being able to use skills of nonviolent communication as a third present really supported me in growing and learning and use those skills when things were hot in my life. Wonderful way to hone skills of self-connection and relational connection by being present to other people's pain and building connection. Having shared that, I would like to move us into a self-connection exercise. We use self-connection exercises throughout the program because self-connection is so important when dealing with conflict, whether it is our own conflict or being present with another person's conflict or other people's conflict. Conflict stirs up a lot in us. And besides that, we're living beings. Things are moving and stirring in us with any kind of stimulation, but certainly conflict is a stimulating stimulation. It's an intense stimulation for many of us because conflict has consequences in our lives in terms of how we are personally and the well-being of others as well. So, at this point, I invite you, if you'd be willing to put anything else aside and to turn your attention toward yourself and just notice your own breathing in this moment. It is an anchor that we can have in any given moment to come back to the present. Shift your attention, if you will, to the sounds you hear around you. Noticing sounds through your ears. Probably notice that they shift and change, sometimes more subtly, sometimes more drastically? And you may have already noticed that thoughts arise about what you hear. I hear birds, thought. The thought, the pure sound. Make a distinction between the pure sound of that and any thoughts you have about it. And if thoughts arise, just gently coach yourself back to increase your attention on sound coming through your ear. And then shift your attention, if you will, to the physical sensations in the core of your body, around your belly area and your heart area. And just notice what those physical sensations are. And then again, if thoughts arise, just acknowledge the thought and then gently coach yourself back to notice the sensations, feelings in your body. You might notice a particular word for an emotion that arises in relationship to that, who we name as feeling. Again, let thoughts go, let the feelings be. And then gently make an inquiry. What are those feelings telling me about the state of my needs? What values? Just rest in that need. If you're not connected with a need, but rather some thought, what's the meaning of that, the deep meaning of that? So you can rest in a universal need, something that you can connect to, precious to all beings, is actually vital to survive and thrive. And then, by their nature, needs often lead us to some idea of how we would like to have that need met. Or if that need is already met, we just savor that. We've just had an opportunity to go through observations versus evaluations, our thoughts, just listening. Just start letting the thoughts go, any evaluations about it. Stir, and then connect to feeling. Again, feeling, close to thought, to be able to make these distinctions. Not that one's better than the other, but to be aware and be at joy. And then need versus strategies and ideas about our needs. And then just allowing whatever comes to us in relationship to those needs in terms of a request or just appreciation for that need.
Now, as you bring this exercise to a close, just do a quick version of that and notice how you're feeling in relationship to yourself as you arrive now to the next part of the call.
And so as we move forward, we're going to overview the mediation process. And we're talking about a particular type of mediation process, the work that we're doing in nonviolent communication. And one of the key distinctions between traditional mediation and the work we're doing, which is more aligned with a transformational or transformative mediation style, is that connection precedes any kind of resolution. We're really focusing on the intention to build a bridge of connection.
So not only does connection precede resolution, but for me anyway, it supersedes resolution. That if I walk into a mediation or conflict situation, and all that I walk out with is a sense of connection and that I have helped to knit a relationship, we might even be further away from a resolution. That's fine by me. My goal is to help people to connect at the heart. And I'm confident that as people get more and more connected at the heart and get connected to their own needs, that naturally strategies will emerge. I don't have to force that kind of an agenda. I just trust the process that if I'm looking for connection, resolution will naturally happen. So I can just let that go. I can let go any thought that I need to do anything in order to help people to resolve something. All I need to do is help people to connect.
And in fact, we've had mediations that have not come to a resolution, and even scheduled second mediations to help them work something out, and receive calls saying, no, we actually worked this out now. Because when there is connection, it's natural that resolution will happen. That's the easy part. In fact, that's the shortest part normally. Usually in our mediation, that once the connection happens, the resolution will happen maybe 10, 15 minutes, having spent an hour or two, maybe even more than one meeting, knitting the quality of connection where people open themselves to each other and themselves and really find that place of honoring what is important about the whole situation.
This is a vital initial skill, to put aside any thought that resolution is the goal, working to maintain the consciousness of NVC. And this is one of the ways that you can do that, is to keep foremost in your mind this notion that connection is my goal here. What can I do to support connection is one of the questions that I'm asking myself. And then sort of a meta strategy of nonviolent communication that helps to create that quality of connection is to continually bring my focus back to needs, to the underlying values that unite us all. All human beings have these same needs. So this is how we build the bridge of connection. I was actually going to shift into the three stages of the mediation process.
So I'd like to do something before and just address something that was brought up around the idea of mandated mediation, and just to acknowledge that people, whether they are actually legally mandated or not, often don't want to be there. They have a lot of hesitation. They come in with a lot of pain. They may be there with have-to energy in it. They have to get a resolution. They have to take care of themselves. They're not really there to mediate in the way that we're focusing on this about building connection. And in the deepest heart of us all, we really do want connection. So I see our job as dusting off whatever is occluding that deeper desire to be connected to ourselves and to other people, and to find some ease and flow into a relationship that works, even if it's a relationship with someone who you're not or they're not planning to see again. I imagine all of us have had a similar experience that I can identify with, where I'm carrying people around inside of me, even though I don't see them and they're technically not part of my everyday life. I can carry them around. And so we're supporting people in having ease in the relationships that people they're face to face with, and then those other parts of ourselves that have been triggered that aren't really the other person, that's just ours, but the other person is now the trigger. And so the focus of the mediation on connection and transformation is transforming the systems on all levels.
Now we'd like to share with you our particular model of mediation. There's lots of different models out there, and I'm guessing that they all meet some needs. And so it's not that we think that this is the best model or the right model or anything like that. It's just a model that we've been finding to be effective, and it's also in process. It's changing as we learn more about NVC and learn more about the process of conflict transformation.
And it also varies by the circumstances of the mediation. A mediation between a married couple is different, for example, than between a landlord and a tenant, or between a parent and a child, or just two neighbors who are dealing with their dog barking across the fence.
What they have in common, as far as I can tell, is that mediations go through three stages. And we have some technical terms that we use to describe these three stages of the mediation process. The first stage is the beginning, the second stage is the middle, and the third stage is the end. And so let's talk a little bit about the beginning. The beginning of a mediation starts before the mediation even begins. It begins when I know that I'm about to have a mediation. So it begins with self-connection and the work that I need to do on myself to get prepared to move towards conflict. This goes against our grain. When we see conflict, our habitual response is to run away from it, generally. At least that's my habitual response. I see conflict and I want to put as much distance between me and the conflict as possible. So it takes a lot of inner work for me to actually want to move towards conflict. So that's the first part for me, is to do some self-connection in order to get clear on why I want to be putting myself into the soup of conflict.
Yeah, the other thing that comes up for us to also address is the part of ourselves that wants to move into the conflict because we want to fix it. We want to make it better. We want to contribute. And to also give ourselves that sense of self-connection, to find some equanimity with what is, because we can't control what happens for other people. To the extent that we can be really connected with ourselves and acknowledge our own part in it and allow other people to have their part in it without the trying to force it in one direction or another, the more we're able to be present and to influence toward connection and to influence toward well-being.
So that's the first part of the beginning. The second part of the beginning is when we're actually in the mediation space, wherever that might be. It might be in a formal setting like a conference room at Metro Court or small claims court. It might be in somebody's living room. It might be on the playground. Conflict occurs everywhere. So the space of mediation can occur anywhere. And once we enter into that space and we have chosen the role of mediator, the next thing that I do is just let people know what to expect in the mediation process. So I might do a very brief overview of what a mediation looks like. I might tell them, first I might express gratitude that they're willing to come to the table and work towards resolution, work towards transformation of the conflict. Then I might tell them a little bit about the mediation process, especially NVC mediation, that will be focusing on what unites us, the bridges that are common between us, that we'll be looking for the common ground, this notion of human needs. And that we might be doing some things during the mediation that are kind of strange, might even be foreign or weird to people. We might be making requests of them to hear one another and to demonstrate that they've heard one another. So we might ask them to reflect what the other person said, and then we reassure them that, well, you know, you don't have to know how to do this. We'll be helping you along the way. We'll also share with them that the point of the mediation for us is to work towards a transformation of the relationship, that what we're wanting to do is to support people in a quality of connection where everyone's needs can be put onto the table. And we also arrive at the mediation with our own vulnerability. That's another important piece for me, is that I'm going to be letting people know how I feel during the mediation. Even right now, as I'm letting folks know what we're going to be doing, I might be feeling excited about the prospect of this mediation, or I might be feeling scared, nervous, whatever the feeling that's alive in me, and then linking it to my own need so that folks know where I am. And that begins the process of modeling so that folks have a way, something to help them to know what's expected during the mediation process.
Yeah, it's a certain quality of safety that people feel when we reveal ourselves. And in fact, if there is emotion going on for us, it's even more important that we reveal that, because people will interpret it in their own ways and often make it self-referential, meaning that they'll think it's about them, or that we're judging them, or something along those lines, where they're not really connected, and their minds then begin to spin on what is this, whether they consciously or unconsciously are aware of feelings. Because there is this vibration that happens in our being, in resonance around emotions, where we sense things beyond the words and what is overt. There's that covert. So we want to reveal what's going on, particularly if there are emotions going on, and take responsibility for them. We're so trained not to take responsibility for our own feelings, and that's part of what we're dealing with other people as we're mediating, is supporting them and taking responsibility for their own feelings rather than that blame and criticism. So we model that as well in our vulnerability.
So after explaining a little bit about the process of mediation, we might pause and ask if there's any clarifying questions. Sometimes people come with concerns. So we just create some space for them to share that in the beginning. And then once that's handled, we move into the last part of the beginning. Key question that we often ask is, who has the resources available right now that would allow you to listen first? This is a lot different than a lot of other mediations that might begin with who wants to speak first. We're asking who has the resources to be willing to listen first.
And we're putting the emphasis on a very important part of the mediation, and that is that everybody wants to be heard. And we think that means that we need to speak. And, of course, we raise our voices louder and louder until we think we've been heard, and we're being heard less and less. And one of our jobs is to slow it down and support people in being heard. The speaking will come on its own with ease, but the listening is something that we do more coaching about.
So just pause for a second and soak in the beginning of the mediation process for yourself. Move now into considering the meat of the matter. The heart of the mediation process is the middle. And we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about the middle today, because most of the course will be focused on dealing with the middle of the mediation process. During the middle, we'll be helping the parties to listen to one another, and we'll be using requests to guide a process of speaking and listening and reflecting. But that is the bulk of the process, and we'll be practicing skills along the way that you can use to help to guide the process. In our model of mediation, the mediator is the facilitator of a conversation. And so during the middle of the mediation, you'll be facilitating what may be a difficult conversation for folks where they've had trouble communicating with each other during a conflict. And so we're going to take over the role of helping them to guide their own process in order to get more connected to one another.
So a conversation has those two parts, speaking and listening. And we'll be focusing on supporting that both are happening, not just talking at each other, but building that bridge until we're talking with each other. So that's probably enough for right now on the middle, because as Jim says, we'll be doing a lot of that.
And then we move into the final part of a mediation. And as Jory mentioned earlier, if we do our work well in the middle, the end takes care of itself. And in the end, we're going to be using the needs that we identified during the middle part of the process to build some requests that address the needs that have been identified. We're going to be helping the parties to make requests of each other that address the needs that are important to them. And then we'll write them down if it seems like a helpful thing to do. We often write down these requests, and then we might take some time to consider them. Maybe they come back after consulting with a friend or a lawyer or a partner, and then to come back and actually do a signed agreement if that seems like something that would support them in having clarity about how they want to transform this conflict into an opportunity.
So that can take several forms in terms of how we get there, but ultimately what we want to support at an end of a mediation is that there is some agreement. Some agreement. It may just be a baby step. And it may just be the initiation of how to unfold the situation. But we end the mediation with some sort of an agreement that we'll talk later, or we're going to consider this, and or maybe it's a more involved, a complex, I'll do this, you'll do that, and then this will happen and that will happen. And, you know, it can be very complex. But at the early stages of mediation, when we have complex situations, we really just go for, okay, we work a lot with couples, and couples who are in deep conflict, sometimes even divorced. And we might end up with an agreement of once a day you'll say at least one thing you appreciate about each other. That might be the agreement. At this point, that's as far as we've gotten. And that would be an agreement to continue to build the bridge. Maybe an agreement about how we're going to separate. Who's going to take care of the kids? It could be a variety of things.
The important thing for me about the agreements, the requests that are made during the end process, is that the gauge or the measurement for the agreements is the needs that the parties have identified during the middle. So that's what we keep going back to. We might have a list of three or four ideas or requests, and we say, now, does this meet the needs that we identified? Maybe the needs were respect, cooperation, consideration, whatever. And we just look at those needs in relationship to the agreements.
Part of our responsibility that I see as a mediator is to make sure that any agreements are ecological, which means that they support the entire system, that they really are addressing the needs of those who are affected by the agreement. So if we're working with a large corporation, you can imagine that some of those agreements may influence how the neighbors around them will be affected. When we've done land use cases, it's not just whether the immediate neighbor, the person whose land it's on, and the developer, it works for them. Does it work for the broader community? Similarly with divorce, how will this work for the children and the rest of the family? So we're holding a bigger picture. We're holding the needs of both parties and also the needs of the rest of those who could be influenced. We can come to all kinds of agreements, you know, well, we don't like the dog, you know, we'll all agree to shoot the dog, you know. that's not ecological. So,
at least from the dog's point of view. The last thing I want to say about the end of the mediation process is that this is a chance where we can use both our observation skills in NVC and our request skills. What I mean by that is we're going to be loaning our consciousness to the parties in order to gain clarity about the agreement, whether or not it's concrete and specific, whether it's stated in the positive, whether it's doable, whether it's a clear and present request, something that can begin to happen right now. And so those are some of the ways that you can use your skills in NVC to help the parties during this end phase. So again, pausing for a moment to see if there's any questions arising in yourself, and then we'll go through and ask folks to first ask any questions about the beginning. So if you have a question about the beginning of the mediation process, let us know.
When in the beginning we ask those we're facilitating who has the resources right now that would allow you to listen first,
mm-hmm.
by such a way of speaking that you and I would be familiar with, but I'm not sure those who are participating in the conflict would be familiar with. So I want a language
mm-hmm.
that is different.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I just say, who'd be willing to listen first? And if it's little kids, something like, could put on their, especially kids that have been trained in a little NVC, you can put on their giraffe ears first. Or who can just put your listening ears on first? Something like that. Just a real simple request.
But then I would go, listen to what? No one has said anything yet.
Yeah, listen to one another. Yeah.
Well, prior to that, we've usually said something along the lines of this is a process of both listening and speaking, and acknowledge that everybody would like to be heard. And one of the ways is to speak one at a time and have the other person listen. So we probably have set that up before.
Okay. First, so I would start with who would be willing to listen and who would be willing to speak first. I'd have to ask a question in both.
Right. Well, I would start with who'd be willing to listen first, and then I'd turn to the other person. Would you be willing to speak first? We put the focus on the listening, because that's the hard part.
Good. I appreciate that emphasis. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Any other questions about the beginning? Well, then we're ready for the middle.
You were talking about basically entering the space and choosing the role of the mediator at that time? Is that how that works? You don't go in knowing you're going to be the mediator, or it just depends?
So you're talking about informal mediation, when we stick out our neck and put our nose between two people who are in conflict. That would be starting maybe not as formally. It may just be, I'm noticing you're in conflict. Or maybe just stepping in immediately with reflection of empathy. Yeah, sounds really frustrated. You would have liked to have had the ball.
I see. So some part of it has to do with how you enter that situation.
Yes. In a formal mediation, we can set it up. In an informal mediation, we would start with either honesty or empathy.
Okay. And then just one other question. You mentioned about making yourself vulnerable, modeling vulnerability, feelings, and needs. Well, what if your feeling is you're afraid of this situation, or you don't like one of the parties, or, you know, you're having a really strong reaction against one of the people, something like that? There's a place for that kind of exposure, and maybe there's also a place for containment, I would think.
My favorite sayings in the Course in Miracles is we're never upset for the reason we think. And so if we think it's about the other person, if it, we're coming from a place of I don't like you or this or that, then I suggest we go deeper into our vulnerability, where we're in a place of taking responsibility for our feelings rather than having it be focused on them.
Would it be appropriate to express being afraid of the situation?
Yeah, it really frightens me, really wanting safety for all of us. The beauty of being able to take responsibility and connect our feelings to our own values are that it's not about the other person. It's about something universal inside of us. So I suggest the vulnerability come at that level. That's why in the beginning, before we even start, we do a lot of self-connection. Even if I'm sticking my nose in to something that's immediate, I'm going to be there really connecting with my own intention. Why am I doing this? What's important to me? Why would I connect in here? I want to be really grounded in my own self-awareness so that I can open myself up and receive them. The less grounded I am in my own self, the more protective I am of parts, the more energy I'm using internally to protect myself, to guard either through emotions similar to anger or fear. So I want to be really grounded and focused and motivated by my values, universal values that I hold dear as everybody else does. And thank you for asking that question, because sharing our honesty can mean so many different things. And what we're talking about is that level of authenticity where we're taking responsibility for our own feelings and needs.
You're saying it's never about somebody else.
The other people can be a trigger or a stimulus, but the same stimulus could stimulate fear in one person. One person is scared because something's going on. Another person is angry because something is going on. Another person is curious. Another person is sad. All of those come from our own individual connection to our own values in that situation and how we're holding it, not the outside event.
And conflict happens when there's, say, between two people, when they obviously have different, seeing the same interaction in two different ways.
So in our model of conflict, conflict always occurs at the level of strategy. So people might have the same need, but they have two different ideas about how to get their needs met. And they get addicted or attached or demanding about how they get their need met. And that is the source of conflict. Think of it at the international level. I think the border of the country should be here. And the other country says, no, I think the border of the country should be here. And so it's all about the strategy of where the border is. And then the goal of the conflict manager in a situation like that is to help the two parties, the two countries, get clear on what their needs are. And maybe the need for using these natural resources along the border or for protection from potential invaders or predators. And once then we get connected at the need level, then we can find some strategies that might be useful in order to solve the conflict at the level of needs. Some new strategies that both parties can see as common ground that can address their needs. And then the conflict disappears for the moment.
And sometimes it's about information. One party may have information the other party doesn't have, so they're seeing it differently, so they're sharing information. So, for example, perhaps one of the neighboring countries is not aware that there's a sacred burial ground in a particular area. And to the extent we can build that bridge of the value of that sacred burial ground, then the dispute around where the lines are drawn disappears. Ah, that's why you were so intensely protecting that. Ah, well, I would like to protect that as well.
So our goal as conflict managers is to take the strategies that are causing the conflict and dig deeper and figure out what the universal needs are that are driving the strategies, get them all out on the table, and then new strategies can emerge from that kind of connection. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions about the middle?
Yes, I also would love to hear just a little bit more, Jim and Jory, on the process of getting connected at the needs level, because what if it doesn't happen as quickly as you think it will? What if people don't see how their needs are connected and you've tried to assist them in making the connection? Would you talk a little bit more about, do you always see that happening? Is there usually a connection bridge made? Like you say, strategies don't always happen. I'd love to hear a little bit more about the process of people who have really made a lot of assumptions about each other.
Yeah, I see my job as to continually point to the needs, just to keep pointing to the needs, to make sure that that is my focus. Wherever their focus is, I reflect and point to the needs.
And if a new need shows up, then you bring that up.
Absolutely. I want to be tracking them just where they are. And we'll be talking about different levels of reflection that we'll be doing. So we don't always just jump in with the need, but my focus is on the need underneath. And that's where I keep bringing that in to the mediation, to bring it to that level. And we do not have control over what other people do, but we have influence. And what is very influential is the universal places where we have resonance. There's a natural resonance around these universal needs and feelings. What we're mostly working with is connecting those feelings to a need, because a lot of this blame and criticism is an erroneous belief that someone else is the cause of my feelings. I'm continually bringing it back to that. No matter what comes out of someone else's mouth, I'm pointing it back to their own experience and their own values.
Are you paraphrasing or do you use the needs list?
It depends. It's a good question, and we will, I think it's next week, our topic is on the different levels of reflection. So we'll be covering that in more detail next week. One of the things that you brought up in your question was something like, does this always work, or something like that. And nothing always works. NVC is a strategy, and the nature of strategies is that you win some and you lose some. As we increase our skill level, we're more likely to have success with a strategy. but nothing's always going to work. But I am learning more and more to trust the process, that the empathic process itself is transformative. So if I stay clear on my intention to stay in empathy with the parties, then that is the energy source that allows a shift to openness to occur. When people walk into a mediation situation, it's because there's a constriction around their heart. They're already closed. And empathy releases the constriction and allows an openness to consider new strategies that could address their needs. And so we do that by staying focused at the heart level, at the need level. Does that help?
It really does. And you will probably talk about the sense of timing. Like you say, sometimes it's 1 hour, sometimes it's 2 hours. You just keep checking in to see what the needs are.
Yes.
In
yep.
terms of how long you stay at the table, the sensing of what's really needed.
Right.
It's also important for us to consider what it means for things to work and the win some, lose some in relationship to what. And for us, we're suggesting that the focus be on connection. And as long as the focus is on connection rather than strategy, we can support a greater sense of connection that someone invariably goes out with at least more connection to themselves.
If they become impatient with our constant focus on connection,
we empathize with that.
Exactly.
Okay.
It might sound like, it seems like you're really feeling impatient and really needing a sense of movement here. Is that right? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or how much you would really like to have some resolution right now. Have this behind you to feel a sense of completion.
And, of course, that's all about connection. Everywhere it goes, it's all about connection is what I'm hearing.
It's all about the connection.
Yeah. And to just expand our understanding of what connection is, not just that you guys are smiling and liking each other, or even that you're talking to each other. There's a sense of connection to what is really important here in our shared humanity. That's going to create a world where we're all a whole lot safer and with more ease and peace.
Thank you for that.
All right. So, any questions about the end?
You mentioned that the area of requests, you kind of listed qualities of the requests, clear and present requests, what other kind of?
In NVC, a request is stated in the positive. It's what you do want, not what you don't want. It's concrete and specific, as much detail and clarity as you can get. And it's something that can happen right now.
You can agree to right now.
So in the context of mediation, the essential component is that right now you can agree to do this thing later.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. We move into the next exercise.
At this step, consider a conflict between two people you know and write down an observation describing the conflict in about two sentences. And when we talk about observation, we're talking about just the facts. The immediate circumstances of this is a man and a woman, they're married, and what happened in their life is she said this to him, or they have two children and they're working out custody. Just the facts, just in the same way we talked about in the beginning of the self-connection exercise, to sort out the observation from the observation mixed with the evaluation or any judgment about it.
The first part of this exercise is just to describe a conflict between two people in about two sentences. We would like to hear what your observation is, and then we would like the opportunity to coach you if we're hearing any evaluation mixed in. This is a key skill for how this class will operate, the ability to make clear observations. So who would be willing?
The conflict is between my sister and myself. When I'm talking to my sister on the phone, she frequently cuts me off with a sentence like, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to talk about this. I know this.
Okay. Great. So I can make a pretty clear picture of that. The only coaching I would offer you is there's something about the phrase cut you off that might have a hint of some of the emotion that you might feel in it. And so a clearer observation might be sometimes when I'm talking to my sister, she says, and then whatever it is.
I don't want to hear this, or I know that.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Cut me off sounds like a judgment.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. Thank you.
It infers her intentionality to do something to you rather than she's doing something because something's alive in her and this is what she does. Thank you.
Someone else?
A friend of mine and I are traveling. We're driving. I'm holding the directions and a map. So I'm sort of giving the directions and my friend is driving. She stops and pulls the map from me, and at the same time I kind of just shove it toward her. She says, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I felt like you were grabbing it from me."
Great. That's a very clear observation. I could make a movie of that. So appreciate that. I've been in that movie.
The word shove and grab may have a bit of sort of pejorativeness to it. So just to be really clear, one person has the map, the other one reaches out and takes the map. The person who had the map kind of adds some energy to it. Just to know it as you consider that, whether that shifts anything in the clarity of the picture, just for everybody to consider whether there's a clearer picture, which way. There's not a right or a wrong about it, you know, which is clearer and has less a sense of someone's doing something wrong.
Yeah, I suppose take the map, grab the map. There's a matter of interpretation there.
Yeah, and we're trying to move from interpretation to actual observation.
Right.
So, yeah, anybody else have one they would like to share?
Raised voices happen between my two children, talking about who gets the newspaper first to read the comics.
That might be enough, actually. Is there more that you think is essential to understand the conflict?
What I had written was hitting, grabbing the papers back and forth, yelling.
Okay, I can make a picture of that. Yep, so as I'm understanding the conflict, you have two children. There's one newspaper with one section of comics, and they both want it at the same time. And what ensues is a battle for who gets to hold the comics first.
Yeah, and a bit clearer would be there are some raised voices and some pulling on the newspaper back and forth.
Great, that's a juicy one. Okay, so we'd actually like to do a brief demonstration and use one of these conflicts that we just heard.
I'd like to take the first one. Between two sisters, one is speaking and the other one says, "I don't want to hear this."
So we're looking for two volunteers now, one to play each sibling. These are two adult folks who are related. So we need two people to play this role, and Jory is going to play the mediator between the two of you.
So who would be willing to play the sister who's speaking? What we're asking you to do is, by the way, when we ask you to play a part, there's no exact script to it except this very beginning line. You get to just kind of be yourself and play it. However, being able to be a participant in mediation, a disputant, to play that role is an important part of the learning that goes on in this entire class. You get firsthand experience on the receiving end of what it's like to do some of the things that may seem very strange to do as a mediator.
I volunteer. I would like to know, am I supposed to try to NBC my responses?
Just be authentic. Our request when you do role plays is to be authentic, and so it might sound like NBC or it might sound like not NBC, and there's no right way to do that, just to be authentic.
And just to be authentic, that obviously something is stirred in. There's an upset around this. Not to do the part of the mediator and not to try and do it right in empathy, but to be authentic. You know, this is a painful situation for you. Would you like to be the sister who is speaking when the other one speaks up, or the one who doesn't want to hear something?
The one that's speaking.
Okay, thank you. So obviously you don't like that she does this, just to be really clear. So who's willing to be the sister who says, "I don't want to hear this," or "I know this," or something along?
"I don't want to talk about this."
I don't want to talk about this, or whatever. For the person who's playing this, I want you to choose your own line so that you're authentic about this. So who's willing to play that part of the person who's hearing more than they're enjoying hearing and letting the other person know by telling them what they don't want?
I can do it.
Okay, so it's going to be very short just to demonstrate a few things here.
I'm just going to do a real brief self-connection exercise, demonstrate what a mediator might go through before they begin. Before the conflict even begins, you just start by being clear on what is your intention in being a conflict manager in this situation. What needs are you hoping to meet? And then if you're a dispute, just get really clear on what your needs are, even though you may not have words to describe them, but just to get connected with what's important, what do you want? And then whenever you're ready, begin the mediation.
Yeah, so I really appreciate that the two of you have come together here to speak with me and to try and work in a relationship. I understand your sisters and that your relationship really matters to you. I support you in being able to hear one another and to be able to resolve whatever conflict you have here. Find a way of being together that would be easier for both of you. And maybe asking you to reflect back what you're hearing from the other person, and I'll be supporting you in that because listening is so important to being heard, and I'm imagining both of you would really like to be heard. So before you speak, I'll be asking you to reflect. So I wonder if you have any questions about that initially.
No.
Are you clear about this? Okay, great. Who has the sense that they could listen first?
I'll listen to Kelly.
Hi, thanks, Kelly.
Well, that's surprising.
Does that work for you?
I have a hard time believing it, but I will.
You really would like to be heard. You would like to trust that you can be heard.
Yeah, and I think I'm here because I don't feel that way, so.
So what's important to you is to be heard and to trust that what you have to say matters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I'm angry.
Mm-hmm. So however you express yourself, you would like the opportunity just to be heard.
Yeah, and as if my feelings and needs also matter in the situation.
So to be heard and have a sense that what is going on for you matters.
Yeah.
I'd like to carry that over to Kelly and just have her reflect that. Would you be willing to have me carry that over now and just hear what comes up for Kelly as she hears that?
Sure.
Is that sure a real willingness at this point, or is there something that's still burning for you that you would like to be heard on?
Well, I have some trepidation about it because of how our interactions usually go, where I'm made out to be wrong.
So you want some assurance that there really is space to hear all that you would like to say.
And that what she says is not going to be, not going to end up in a right-wrong battle, like she's right, I'm wrong, or the other way, I suppose, as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so some sort of acceptance and the connection to what is really important to you.
It's space for both realities.
Mm-hmm. So space for both realities.
And if we can get to a shared reality, all the better. In the meantime, it would be nice to have a space where both realities could be right.
Mm-hmm. So space for both realities. So I'm going to carry this over to Kelly and have her reflect that and to see how she's doing, and then there'll be another opportunity for you to speak. Does that work for you?
Yes.
Thank you. So what I heard from you again is that space for both realities is important to you. And Kelly, I wonder if you would just reflect that in this moment before we listen to you.
Well, I'm hearing her say that she wants to be heard, and she doesn't want anyone to be right or wrong, or she doesn't want me to accuse someone of being right or wrong. But I feel like...
And I also heard one other thing. I heard just that there's space for both realities. Would you be willing to reflect that?
I can, like, say the words back that, you know, she wants there to be space for both realities, but I guess I'm not totally clear on what she means.
Yeah. So that for you is not real clear in this moment. So you would like some more clarity about what that could even look like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. And what else would you like understood in this situation?
Well, I guess when she says she wants to be heard, I feel like I'm always listening. And I'd like to, you know, like when we're on the phone, which is why she said she wanted to talk about this anyway, because as she said, you know, I like cut her off sometimes. But she tells me the same things all the time. So, you know, I have some things I wanted to tell her too, and I don't feel like I ever get to do that.
So you too would like some balance in being heard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is there more?
No, I think that's really it.
Mm-hmm. So balance in being heard. Well, I'll take that over to Senta now. And Senta, would you be willing to just reflect that piece that you heard was so important to her about the balance in being heard?
I hear that she also would like to be heard.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And how is that for you?
I feel like I'm a pretty good listener, actually, so I don't really know why. I mean, I like hearing that she has this need, and if she were to say that to me, up front, maybe, you know, rather than cutting me off, I think I'd be okay with that. I don't mind when I really hear a direct need. Well, I might sometimes, but it was fine to hear that she has that need. I feel like I'm able to listen and respond to that need.
Mm-hmm. So you really value balance and being heard as well.
Yeah, if I know the need is there. Sometimes I just talk because I'm trying to fill the space, or I'm nervous about silence, or if I didn't fill the space, maybe nothing would be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you really want to support the connection between you.
Yeah, and I think both people need to come forward with their authentic selves and needs without cutting off or blaming or that kind of thing.
I'm going to push pause here and ask the two disputants just to drop into yourself and notice how you feel right now in the conflict. Ask the mediator to do the same and all the observers just to notice any physical sensations or emotions in your body right now at this place of the conflict. And connect the feelings that you have right now to the state of your own needs. Maybe there's some needs that have been met through this, and maybe there's still some needs that have not been met yet, because we only did this for about 10 minutes. If each disputant would say just a sentence or two about how you're feeling and anything that you noticed about the mediation process and how it affected you. So beginning with Senta.
I notice a constriction in my chest, but I always feel that. I feel that a lot. But my reaction, I felt like at a certain point when the mediator came in and kind of stopped Kelly from speaking at a moment, at that moment I felt like I had an ally, and I never feel like I have an ally, and that's a source of pain for me. I feel like I don't have a voice, and I don't have an ally.
So the mediator stepping in that moment really met your need for support.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Thanks. How about you, Kelly? What was it like for you?
Similarly to what Senta said, yes, I've always felt tense when I'm a participant in the conflict. So I did hear as well, I felt like I was about 10 years old, you know, just having some petty schoolyard argument or something in my head and my heart. I was trying to focus on petty issues and, you know, trying not to be NVC about it. And it just made me feel so immature and silly. But then when the mediator came in, it helped calm me, and she did help me really feel and see both sides in a more objective way.
Great. Thanks. Tori, anything you'd like to say about the mediation?
I appreciate that both of you are willing to step in. One of the things that I did as a mediator that I really value is that I held the process, not to the point where I would beat somebody else up if they weren't doing it, but I'm tracking that process so that if we start to move out of that process of connection where people are speaking and others are listening and reflecting, I'm monitoring that and I bring it back to it. So when there was a deviation into some place, one of the things you might have noticed is how as soon as someone would finish reflecting, even though there might have been some more words that would have followed, I would always say thank you and create some space to allow that to be savored. That, yes, you were just heard. Maybe you have some judgment about how you were heard. Maybe it was, you know, whatever. But I savor that. Yes, thank you. You got it. Thank you. You just got what was going on. Savor that. We just did this for 10 minutes. It's just the very beginning.
And so I'd like to invite Kelly and Senta to let go of the roles with our appreciation for the authenticity that you brought to it and for being the first ones to do this. That really met my need for support and for contribution to the class. So thank you. Just let them go and get back into being Senta and Kelly. And I'd like to move into a closing round to just hear from folks to celebrate and mourn whatever's been going on in the class, give people a chance to just express how this class was for them.
I enjoyed listening to everyone, and I appreciate you all doing the demonstration. It's just powerful to me to hear how you can go stay in that position. I really don't know how you're doing it, but I mean, I've read about it, but the actual staying in it was really powerful to listen to and experience. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm just feeling a lot of appreciation for everything that's been shared, and I just love the bits and pieces that come together and the reinforcement of it all, the awarenesses that come out of that. So I'm feeling grateful.
Yeah. I'm appreciative of listening closely to the mediator. I appreciated, Jory, your pacing. I've observed several mediations, and the pacing didn't work for me, and I appreciated what you said about let them digest, and every time you said thank you, it could be interpreted as cutting off, but it also could be that's all we need now. So that was a learning for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
I thought that it was a great experience, and even though it was very short, to help us stay in the present is so critical. And that's really what I want to work on. So I appreciate it all. It was a great experience.
I'm feeling actually overwhelmed, but hopeful. I mean, this is something I really want to be able to do in my life as well as helping others. I believe I understand the process, especially listening through the example, but I'm a little overwhelmed in being able to do it, I guess, at this point.
Good thing we have 5 weeks and the rest of our lives to go, huh?
I agree. Yes, thank you.
Yes, we've just begun. Thank you.
It was very evident from the teaching part and then the mediation exercise that connection and presence is the major thing, and that's what I'm looking for. I recognize some of the skills, and I know I need to practice a lot. So I'm really glad there will be some practice time ahead of us.
Definitely.
Doing the role play was really enlivening. Having the experience of the mediator felt, it met my need for mirroring of my needs. And I also appreciate how the two of you are doing this balancing act of speaking and then letting the other one have the stage and then going back and forth like that. I can imagine that could be a delicate balance at moments. And I think you guys navigate those waters really well. Meet my need for good modeling of working in partnership.
Thank you.
I've just really enjoyed today, and participating in the role play was really helpful to understand what it feels like to be a disputant in a mediation. Certainly around here, I'm the one who normally tries to mediate. I'm always really worried about what the other people are feeling and thinking about me, what sort of effect I'm having. So that was just really helpful, and I look forward to doing more. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm coming away feeling a lot of hopefulness and really inspired by what I heard today and becoming aware of the actual dance steps of how to acknowledge another person's reality and at the same time acknowledge my reality. So I'm excited. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we actually have some practice exercises that we are offering that you'd be able to work with, and I'll read them. They're all about exploring your own relationship to conflict, considering your own conflict history. What do you notice are your own habitual patterns in response to conflict so that you can start to be aware of them rather than them coming up for you unconsciously when you're putting your own things on the shelf to be with someone else? And then notice your reactions to conflict in the coming week in general. So you'll be observing that and making a note of it. And then the third one is to speak with an empathy or practice buddy for at least 15 to 20 minutes each to explore with presence your relationship to conflicts. Alrighty. So anything else before we depart that anybody wants to say?
Yeah, I'd like to check out. I just want to say how happy I am that I really enjoyed this class. I enjoyed getting to connect with all of you. I enjoyed the feedback that I heard, you know, both the celebrations of the needs that were met and also the mourning about the overwhelm and the lack of clarity. That's all real important feedback for me to hear. And I guess I'm also wanting to share that that's exactly where we would expect people to be after the first class, to have a sense of, whoa, there's a lot here. I'm glad we have some time to explore it. I really enjoyed the sense of presence on the call and enjoyed also the dance that Jory and I did together. So I'm really glad to have been here and to spend this time with you.
Thank you all for being here.